Why is it so difficult for us in our everyday lives to just be?
Oftentimes, we don't want to face what is going on for us.
What were the specific issues that you were dealing with?
I had a lot of body image challenges, staring at myself in the mirror, trying to be perfect. I can look back and really see like how wounded and how sad, and I was just trying to survive.
We're all kind of trying to be happy, but we're searching for it.
It's very easy to say, like, when I get married, I'll feel happy. When I get this raise, I'll feel happy. When I run the marathon, I'll feel happy. It's not about that end goal, because you're going to meet it. And then what?
In my life, when I'm the most content, it's when I'm the most present. It's the little moments that make you the happiest, not vacations and the parties and the rooftop drinks.
Anything that is pulling us from the present moment just means that you don't have to face what is going on. The only way to the other side is through. And usually that means like sitting in the shitty feelings.
I personally find it difficult to spend time around people who are not focused on self-improvement. I am unable to just let people be whatever they want to be without trying to change them.
I think the more you can heal yourself, you are just naturally going to impact the people around you.
What is self-care?
It's definitely a buzzword. self-care is...
Caroline, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it. So much I want to get into, especially we're in the new year, so there's lots of New Year's resolutions being thrown around and people wanting to improve themselves. So you are the perfect person to be here to have this conversation. First of all, before we get into all the self-care and the tips and tricks for being your best self, I first just want to ask you, you're a holistic counselor. I feel like when we hear the word holistic, that word might mean different things to different people. Can you just set the record straight and tell me what a holistic counselor is and what it is that you do?
Thank you for having me. And that is a great question. I think my answer is going to be different from everyone else's answer in terms of holistic counseling. So for me, holistic counseling is really embodying the mind, the body, and the spirit and the energetics when you're working with a client or a person in terms of healing them. There are so many different modalities of counseling and therapy and coaching and healing. But for me, holistic is looking at the whole person versus just one specific problem or one specific pain point for them.
So why did you get into this field?
It's been an evolving choice for me. I started my master's degree is just in very traditional counseling, psychology background. And after graduate school, and when I discovered, honestly, yoga is really when I started to pull in this more holistic viewpoint. I realized that there was more to healing than just understanding some of the like counseling theories and how my experience has applied to it. And instead, I really realized it's more energetic based as well. I started to study more like chakras and energies and inner child work. So just over the years of being exposed to different teachers and experiences and trainings is really where I've developed my specific holistic counseling model. Everything I've developed is something that I've practiced and went through myself.
One of my really good friends who lives in London is a therapist, and she once told me that you don't get into therapy without having gone through some severe mental issues yourself. So I'm wondering, for someone who is a holistic counselor, did you need it at some point personally in your life that kind of led you to be inspired to work in this field?
Yes, definitely. I believe that everyone personally should have a counselor or some sort of support in that way. I've had a counselor since I was in high school. High school was challenging on many levels, and I not only had a great school counselor, who then connected me with an outside therapist. And so I've been someone who's been seeking the benefits of really traditional, that was very traditional talk therapy sent from a very young age, and continued it throughout college and then life after college. Of course, I've ebbed and flowed with who I've seen because I've grown over the years and who I connect with now is very different as a holistic counselor. But that's also helped me evolve in terms of now the teachers and healers that I work with are all more in the holistic frame point versus when I started, it was very much traditional therapists and clinicians.
What were the specific issues that you were dealing with early on in the high school, college, 20s?
I was a dancer growing up. And so dancing, I had a lot of body image challenges, staring at myself in the mirror, trying to be perfect.
Very common among that community, right?
Yes. Yeah. Very common.
Gymnast too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's common just, I think, across the board as well. Now, on the other side of things, I work with all ages of students and people, but high school is part of that as well. So you see it across the board. But for me, it started with the body image challenges. And I now know that I can also identify it as anxiety. I think back then, I didn't know how to pinpoint my range of emotions. I was really just not settled in who I was. I was constantly trying to find who I was and experimenting maybe with things I shouldn't have experimented with, in and out of different friend groups. And I still had a solid group, but it was a trial and error. And through that, I just couldn't regulate my emotions in a way that was helpful. So connecting with a counselor just helped to give me a place just that I could be myself and that I wasn't feeling like I was disappointing people all the time, because I think I went from being a very good girl, I guess, to kind of just being a little bit more experimental in high school. And so there was a lot of changes. I was really trying to find myself. And now as a 32-year-old, I can look back and really see how wounded and how sad, and I was just trying to survive. But there's been a lot of healing around those younger versions of myself throughout the years.
At what point did you kind of flip the switch? I mean, the work on yourself never really stops. I don't think you're ever truly healed. But at what point for you did you start to notice, oh, I think I've got a much better handle on this now. I have a much better idea of who I am and more confidence. And those issues that I dealt with early on are kind of not a problem anymore.
I really would say it's when I found yoga back in 2017, 2018 or so. And for me, I was never, again, dancer background, but never was one to try yoga or really meditate or any of that stuff. Like I had thought I tried it and it wasn't really giving it a chance. I was like, that doesn't work on me. But when I actually started to commit to the work of yoga and mindfulness and honestly doing inner child work and energetic work is when I started to feel a sense of relief. I also felt a sense of I understood myself for the first time. So I would say, I don't remember if there's not a specific day where I just woke up and was like, huh, I'm good. I don't feel stressed anymore. But I think over the years, I've just noticed that situations that used to trigger me, they just either don't, or I know, okay, I'm being triggered for this reason. And these are my tools that I can use to work through it. And that is such a grounding and empowered place to feel like I have control and awareness over my emotions. And that is definitely not something that I had at a young teenage age.
What led you to take that first yoga class?
My first yoga class, it was at a point, like I said, after my grad school years and, trying to become an adult for the first time, I had left a very long and serious relationship where I didn't really know who I was at all when I got out of it. I had moved back home. I had just started my first adult job, and I didn't really know what my hobbies were. I tried taking a dance class and was like, this doesn't really connect with me anymore. I always went to the gym, but I felt like I needed a community. I needed something. And so someone just recommended yoga among many other things that I tried. And I went to my first yoga class and I was sold. I was crying at the end of it. I was like, wow. Yeah, this is what's going to heal me.
Why were you so sold?
Oh, I'm pulled into it. I think maybe from the dancing piece, it feels familiar to me in terms of I felt such a good workout in a way. It's like a subtle, sneaky workout, the class that I had taken that first time. But beyond just the physical piece, it was really at the end, the teacher just gave us permission to feel and be exactly where we were in that moment. And I didn't have someone to just give me permission, just to like hold space. I wasn't feeling great in that moment. So it gave me a sense of just feeling seen, but also just the space that it can feel okay to feel okay, but it also can feel okay not to feel okay. And then from there, my journey started.
That's my favorite thing about yoga class. I have been practicing for, 11 years maybe at this point. And I had a similar experience. I'm always going. I love doing things. If my body's not always going, my mind is always going. And yoga, going to a class in a way, is kind of forcing myself to slow down. It's literally scheduled time for me to slow down and just feel and just be, and getting that permission from someone else, because we often will never give that permission to ourselves. We kind of have to have someone else force us to do it, which is why I love yoga so much. And you teach at Three Bridges here in Portsmouth. I love that studio. And it's exactly a place where I feel with Stephanie, who runs the place, where you probably felt at your first yoga class, you feel cared for and like you are enough and you are worthy and all those wonderful things.
Oh, I totally agree. And when I moved back to this area a few years ago and started going to Three Bridges and took actually Stephanie's class, I felt that same sense of like home. You know, it feels familiar. And yes, I do teach there now. And if students come like week to week, I really start by saying something very similar when I start my classes, which is just giving yourself permission just to be and honoring what you need that night. I think sometimes we come in and we need to move a lot. We need to get energy out. And other times we need to just settle and rest and be more gentle. And so often I think we try to force ourselves through our yoga practice, just like we force ourselves through life sometimes. And it doesn't need to be like that. So just giving people the chance to connect more with like, what is their intuition telling them in that moment? And like not what someone next to you is doing, but like, what do you need? I think yoga can really help to strengthen that sense of your own like self-understanding, your intuition, and then like taking action to follow it.
Why don't we give ourselves that space that yoga provides us? And I mean, more so in our everyday life. You often hear, I've heard it said that sitting still in silence is perhaps the hardest thing to do in the world, when in reality, like, you're actually not doing anything physically, but it is the hardest thing to get yourself to do. And in yoga, you know, I know there's a joke among yoga instructors that Shavasana, the resting pose, can be the most difficult pose that you do, because you have to rest and sit with your thoughts and not do anything and just be. Why is it so difficult for us in our everyday lives to just be?
Oftentimes we don't want to face what is going on for us. And sometimes we have been shoving it down for years and years and years. And so if we're constantly going and being and, you know, either working or surrounding ourselves with people, using substances, anything that is pulling us from the present moment, just means that you don't have to face what is going on, or maybe truths about a certain situation. I think it's easier to mask it and keep moving than to sit with it. Because to be honest, sitting with it can feel more painful than anything else. But the only way through something and to the other side, or I guess the only way to the other side is through. And usually that means like sitting in the shitty feelings, like sitting in the sadness and actually facing it. But it's hard. And I'm guilty of doing this as well. Sometimes avoiding meditating and avoiding really slowing down when I know that I need to make a different decision in my life, because I know that when I start to slow down, I'll hear like, you should be doing this instead. And I'm like, no, because this feels familiar, right? Like, we also, as people, we don't love change. At least I don't, right? And so even if say, I'm just going to give an example of like leaving a relationship or leaving a job. If every time you quiet your mind, that is the messaging of like, I need to like switch careers, or I need to be working somewhere different. I need to like bring up this hard conversation in my relationship. All of those things are going to mean that your daily sense of self is about to change. Your routine is about to change. Your familiarity is about to change. So instead of facing that, we tend to shove it down and just keep moving, and we keep going forward. It's Shavasana is hard. The best advice I can give, if you're like listening, saying, yeah, Shavasana is not my thing, is just to focus on maybe like one of your sensations instead. And so trying to find something in the room that you can hear. Maybe it's like the clock ticking or the heat kind of crackling, someone snoring, maybe if someone's snoring in Shavasana, or something that you can feel in your body, something that you can taste, touch, or just truly just talking to yourself. I am breathing in and I am breathing out. It's not going to fix your problems, right? Like, it's not laying in Shavasana and calming your mind for 5 minutes isn't going to magically heal everything, but it is going to start to strengthen that muscle of being able to drop into the present moment and practice mindfulness. And in turn, it helps us to better regulate our emotions and just be with the good, the bad, the easy, and everything in between.
I've been thinking a lot recently, for some weird reason, about evolution and why human beings are wired the way we are. And it kills me that so much of our modern advancements in technology, which is supposed to enhance our lives and make it better, is actually working directly against our brains and the way that we are wired. Our brains are supercomputers that are designed for an age in which our sole purpose was to find shelter, to be comfortable, to find food, and to avoid the tigers. And we still have our brain operating under that mindset in today's world, where we don't have to deal in this country with any of those issues. So it's both a blessing and a curse. And today, with modern technology, there's just so many in the modern economy. There's so many distractions. There's so many things, the phones and the technology, and I talk about this all the time, that pull on our brain's strings to give us the dopamine hits that we crave, that we used to crave for a different reason, and now we get them today in these ways. And it makes it so difficult, Caroline, to be present. And I found that in my life, when I'm the most content, it's when I'm the most present. I don't think you can have happiness and contentment without presence and feeling and smelling the smells and hearing the sounds and feeling your breath and enjoying the moments, the little moments. It's the little moments that make you the happiest, not the big ones and the vacations and the parties and the rooftop drinks, you know? That's when we're happiest. And I feel like so many people are so unhappy because it's so difficult now to enjoy the present moment, because being present can be so difficult, but going on your phone and scrolling TikTok is so easy.
It is. And you mentioned that dopamine hit. And so when you go on your phone and you scroll TikTok or you text someone or you read an article, you are in theory like giving yourself a hit of that dopamine every single time. And you're just continuing to reinforce it and reinforce it, even if it's not the healthiest for you. I would ask or challenge someone to just think about how often a day you go to just reach for your phone and touch it. Even for me at work or when I'm doing anything, if I'm even trying to be present and meditate, sometimes I'll just hit the phone open. And so I would be curious to see, it's such an automatic thing.
Want to hear something crazy?
Yes.
I've got this new app. It's called Opal. It's a screen time prevention app because I'm very conscious of my screen time because I fall victim to that thing that you just mentioned all the time. It tells you how many times a day you pick up your phone, and it tells you your focus score on a scale of 0 to 100. So pretty much every day I have a focus score of like 85 to 95%, B to an A range, pretty good. The number of pickups that is, and that's a good score, is like at minimum 170 times. And that's on a good day. So imagine if you have a focus score of 50, you're probably picking up your phone like 400 to 500 times, which is crazy.
Wow. I need this app. just for my own data collection. It's such an automatic thing. And, you know, the other piece too that I tend to do often is I'll delete my, I really only use Instagram at this time primarily. And sometimes I love it because I'm looking up quotes and different yoga inspiration things. And then other times I'm just comparing someone else's holiday to mine and like theirs looks more fun. And so I actually tend to like delete the apps that I'm finding that I'm going to when I need that mental escape that are just not adding anything to my life. I'm sure there's an app to like control the time and all that stuff, but for me, it's just easiest to get it completely off my phone. And it's interesting because the first few days when I've done this in the past, my fingers will like hit the home screen that go right to where the app used to be. And it's like, wow, I never knew how much I was just utilizing my phone to be away from the present moment.
Yeah. It's so easy to, and being present is so hard. I think yoga teachers, I love going to yoga studios, not only for the workout and the presence, but also because I think yoga instructors are just the smartest, wisest people ever. The words that you say throughout the course of a class just really have me thinking and really have me thinking about how I can live this practice off of the mat as well, which is at the root of yoga, why we're doing it to enhance our everyday lives. But it's interesting and comforting to hear that, okay, you guys also have your own issues and are struggling with the exact same things. You just may have a better awareness of it going on than a lot of us do, but you still struggle with it.
Definitely still struggle with it. Same with counseling, right? Like counselors struggle with their own, you know, challenges as well, just like yoga instructors or anyone really in like that health and wellness field. It's just exactly what you said. I think having an awareness of it, for me, one of the things I'm proudest of that I've worked the hardest for is self-awareness, because I did not always have that. And so that for me, and self-ownership as well, and knowing, you know, when I do need to use my tools to, like I said, delete like Instagram, just for example, or to put my phone away, to really drop in if I'm not able just to do it on my own. And it's situational, I'd say too. There are some times where it's really easy for me to not be distracted by that and really live in the flow and live in the present moment. And the words that I'm speaking to classes and teaching are, you know, a certain way. And then when there's other times where I'm really, you know, like say holidays are hard for a lot of people. So holidays are where I really roll up my sleeves and use my own tools. And then the words that I'm saying and sharing in my classes that I'm teaching are things that I'm directly using in my own life. So just like you come to yoga and you feel that sense of healing and words to heal yourself on and off the mat, I also feel like I'm being healed every time I teach a class.
What would you say to someone, because I imagine yoga could be a New Year's resolution for a lot of people or something that they've just been thinking about getting into, they've been on the fence for it for a while. What would you say to someone who is on the fence about it, maybe thinks that, oh, I'm going to be a beginner in a room full of people who know exactly what they're doing. Everyone's going to be staring at me. I'm going to look like such an idiot. And then it's just going to make me want to shrivel up and cry. What would you say to someone who is a bit fearful or scared of going to a yoga class, but does want to?
It's okay to be scared, but you have to try. You have to start somewhere. Your beginning is someone else's middle, and you will not always be a beginner, but you have to start somewhere. I would say a few pieces of advice to feel more comfortable with it is also just remind yourself, this is just a yoga class. So even if you go and, you know, it doesn't go well, then it's an hour of your day. You continue to move on and it's just another experience. If anything, it's a way that you showed up for yourself. It's a way that you're just building that relationship with yourself. But think about what would make you feel comfortable going to a yoga class. So is it bringing a friend, bringing someone with you? I think that can be a great way to start out something if you're truly feeling nervous, is to have a support system. Maybe someone who's been to a studio before so that you feel more familiar if that is something that you're truly worried about. The other thing is looking for the right studio, looking for the right classes. So if you're a beginner, you know, truly trying a beginner class. And that goes for anything, yoga or not yoga. We have to start somewhere. I remember my first yoga class. By the end, like I said, I was crying and I loved it. But I remember midway through, I was like, what is a vinyasa? Like, I don't know what a chaturanga is. And I was just looking around and it is overwhelming. So I think acknowledging, like, it's okay if you're going to feel that way. We all do when we start something new. You will not always feel that way.
So something that you probably learned in your teacher training is something that I've been fascinated by for a while, and I could probably just do a quick Wikipedia search, but I'm too lazy to do that. What are the chakras? Can you talk to me about the chakras, what they are, and what we can learn from them to apply to our lives?
Yes, I love the chakras. So chakras are, they're energy systems. And so there are 7 different chakras in our body, and they're by color. So starting with our root chakra, which is red, it goes into our sacral chakra, solar plexus, our heart chakra, our throat chakra, our third eye chakra, and then our crown. And they're all connected, like I said, by color and by frequencies, by vibrations. And essentially what it is if there's a block in your chakra, say your heart chakra, it just means that your energy is not flowing as openly as it could be, essentially. So when we're aware of our certain chakra centers and maybe poses that we can do to help activate our chakras or balance them, it just is in theory helping to balance our entire system.
How do you become aware of your chakras and what's going on there?
Working with wonderful teachers. I have a wonderful Reiki master. So I'm Reiki level 1 certified. So what Reiki is balancing and cleansing your chakras, essentially, because they can be blocked, they can be wobbly, and it's all based on energetics. And so just starting, I would say, like, having a Reiki session is a wonderful way to have a Reiki master, you know, tell you what your energy and chakras look like. And your chakras could look one way today, and then next week they could maybe look a different way just based on what's going on in your day-to-day life.
So I'm hearing this and I'm open-minded and I love all this stuff and I'm fascinated by it. But on my most recent episode, I had a fortune teller on, and I feel like fortune telling, astrology, chakras, all kind of falls into the category for a lot of people. Like what is this witch magic that you're all referring to? And I bet a lot of men especially are like, okay, that's BS. Like, I can't believe you just spent money to go see this person to balance your chakras. That's stupid. Like, go outside and that will fix all your problems. What would you say to the skeptics who think this is all just hogwash?
I guess everyone's entitled to their, you know, to their opinion on it. And it, until you experience the benefits of whatever modality you want to pursue, you might think that it's just hogwash. And just because one person really honors chakra and Reiki work, doesn't mean that they also are going to jump right into astrology work. You know, so I think everyone is truly trying to find what works for them and what their belief system is. But I think I could, like, pretend to, like, spit out a bunch of, like, science behind the energy systems. There is a lot of science behind the chakra system itself specifically. And I think a lot of times, like, evidence-based helps just enforce people to see, like, okay, this isn't just some, like, hocus pocus, you know, fluff work that we're doing. But I also think if it's working for someone and it's adding value to their life, whether it's getting, like, reading palms, following astrology, balancing and educating yourself on, like, Reiki and chakra work, and anything in between, if it's helping you, you know, having crystals around your house, if you feel like that's adding a benefit and you are becoming a better version of yourself, that's really all that should matter. Because trust me, I have received that feedback from other people in, you know, my life. I have crystals in my house. And so people have asked about the crystals, like, oh, does this rock really do anything? And it's like, does it matter if it does or not? If I believe that the benefits are helping me, then yes, it does. So I think if it's working for you in a effective way, then that's really all that matters.
Let's talk about something that I am really passionate about and have been, and I think has kind of become like a buzz term over the last few years: self-care. What is self-care?
It's definitely a buzzword. self-care is, like, truly giving yourself what you need in the day to day. I think on a very surface level, people think of self-care and they think of getting, you know, going shopping and going to the spa and getting your nails done, sometimes that is self-care. Like, sometimes we do need very just quick, just jumps to feeling good, feeling just ourselves. But self-care is such a deep thing. And self-care sometimes looks like setting boundaries and taking space from people in your lives to help foster the relationship with yourself. Sometimes self-care is giving up substances or alcohol because you know, even when maybe your friends are doing it, because you know that you need to really face maybe what you are facing or what you've been hiding from and what you need to face. So I think self-care is such a deeper meaning than a lot of people give it. I think on the flip side, self-care has been showing up a lot more over the past few years, but I think there's a lot more awareness and openness just to talking about our emotions. I think people not pretending like everything is okay, or people being open to different self-care practices. You know, self-care can look like going to therapy. Self-care can be going to a workout class because that helps bring you a sense of like the endorphins that are the healthy ones. So self-care is really individualized, I believe, and can be a really deep thing. But sometimes self-care doesn't feel great in the moment, but it's what we need in the long run.
I've been having such a back and forth relationship with it, and maybe it's because it's individualized. I think I saw on your Instagram from the archives that one way to practice self-care is eating that piece of cake when you really want it without beating yourself up for it, or without feeling like you just have to go run it off at the gym the next day. And so I kind of go back and forth. I totally get your point. You want it, you should have it, you should not deprive yourself. There's a difference between deprivation and discipline. Deprivation, bad, mostly. Discipline, good, mostly. On the other side, and maybe I'm biased because I'm newly a diabetic, so I'm more aware of like a piece of cake is not good for you. Like in no way is it physically good for you. I think factually we can all agree on that. It makes me feel bad, and it probably makes a lot of other people feel bad too. Wouldn't it be more self-care for you to say, no to that piece of cake, I'm going to go for a run instead, because you are ultimately doing your body more of a service going for a run than eating the piece of cake? Does any of this make sense to you? Where do you lie on this?
You know, I can see both sides of the coin, if I'm being honest. I think for someone who, if food and relationship to food is not something that they've had to work on, then your point is, yes, self-care is going for a run or doing something else besides eating the cake. I think for someone, and sometimes again, my posts come from experience or from what my clients are working through as well. If that is something that has always been really hard on you, where if you've had something, we'll just go with cake because we're talking about it, to eat, and then you've always shamed yourself, and then it's been a deeper meaning, then having that piece of cake really isn't about the cake. It's really about something more and healing a deeper sense of self or deeper layer to yourself in that moment.
That's such a good thought experiment. Something that honestly, like you said, like a lot of the stuff, you never truly figured out. I think we're all trying to reach enlightenment and self-actualization. You never truly get there. It is a lifelong battle. Even for those who study it, preach it, teach it, it is extremely hard to get a hold of.
It is.
Battle you'll always fight.
I think too, for the longest time, when I really first started all this, I was so like positive energy only. And like, if I'm just like going to go down this positive track and healing, then I will reach enlightenment. So I used to feel that way. You know, if I don't talk anything negative or if I don't feel those things, then I'm going to be enlightened really quickly. And I learned that's definitely not the way around it. Yeah. It is a lifelong journey. And the goal for me that I've felt is instead feeling just like happiness and peace right now, like no matter what's going on, but just like in that moment. So like, is that enlightenment? I don't know.
Another buzz term is manifesting. A lot of people, especially at the start of the year, want to manifest things. I want to manifest this new car. I want to manifest this job, manifest this ideal girlfriend out of thin air, ideal boyfriend. Where do you fall on the manifestation track? Because that is something that a lot of people talk about and believe in.
My answer is different now than it would have been several years ago. I used to think if I could just envision it and write a list, then it would just appear. And maybe for some people, it happens like that. But now I realize it's great to have the goals and you can work towards manifesting things, but you need to understand the energetics behind manifesting. So if you are trying to manifest a relationship and a certain type of partner, but your actions day to day are not reflecting that high value and high self-worth that you're hoping to get out of a relationship, then energetically, you're not in a place that you're going to align a higher level relationship. Like so often if we jump from one relationship to another and we don't take time to heal, we tend to go into that with a very similar like mindset. And then you tend to find that the patterns continue to repeat itself. So I believe the same thing with manifesting is really understanding and healing any energetics behind why you want the thing first and believing that you're worthy and deserving of that thing and taking action steps to get there. So if you want to manifest a new car, but then aren't taking any actions to get the new car, cars are just going to fall out of the sky and come on your lap, you know? So it is like researching or starting to put feelers out to people to start to hear like about opportunities. Like, you know, I think, so it's really, I believe manifesting is more about being aware and being aware of the energetics and intention behind what you want, but then also putting actions forward. So it's a little bit of a balance, not just sitting and wishing.
A big struggle of mine as someone who is so focused on personal development, self-improvement, self-care, a lot of people aren't focused on those things, are just kind of moving about through life. And I feel, not to toot my own horns here, but I feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on life because I've been doing yoga for so long, because I've been reading philosophy and ancient texts and thinking, obsessing about these things, about how to live your best life. I just published a book a few months ago as well. I think about these things all the time. So I think I've got a good grasp. Many people do not. I personally find it difficult to spend time around people who are not focused on self-improvement. It is difficult for me. And that is a flaw of mine that I am unable to just let people be whatever they want to be without trying to change them. Do you in your personal life outside of your work struggle with that at all?
Yes. Yes. And I ask myself in moments like that, what is this maybe bringing up for me? So if it's a certain person and I'm having a hard time hearing them, I think it's easy, especially with like family and friends, people who are close to you, to pick up on those, you know, the way that they're speaking or their mindsets and things like that. And it can feel more easily, you can feel more easily frustrated with it. So I try to ask myself, you know, what is this still bringing up in me that I could maybe work on? But it tends, yeah, this is something that I've faced as well. When I first started my journey, I actually feel like I distanced myself a lot, even just from close family and friends, because I just all of a sudden felt like no one understands what I'm going through. And like, I don't want to talk about like, how was your day? I want to talk about like, tell me about your childhood.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, oh my like, God. I get it.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of finding a balance too about that. And I have found just organically over the years that people have shifted into my life that we are having more like-minded conversations around and just trying to surround myself more with, you know, people like that. And of course you can't just avoid everyone else forever, but I think it's just an understanding that you can't make someone go down a journey if they're not ready. And so just also holding space for who they are, and truly just continuing to come back to being yourself and healing yourself. And I think the more you can heal yourself, you are just naturally going to ripple and impact the people around you.
Do you think, because I was in a romantic relationship recently that ended kind of just based on this reason, like we just have two completely different approaches to life, like all love between each other, just different approaches to life. Nothing specific happened. Just like, I'm really obsessed with becoming my best self. They're not. And so I was like, do I just accept this and be okay with that and just let them be and not try to change them and ask myself, okay, what is this bringing up in me? Or should I just not put that effort in and just accept I should just be with someone more like-minded because I can tolerate that? Like, which do you think I should have done?
I don't think there's a wrong answer or a right answer, to be honest, because sometimes if you leave, you would, you'll have maybe like the what ifs and vice versa. So I think it's really what is consuming your day-to-day thoughts. And if it was consuming more so to stay and feeling more so like triggered or just more activated where the relationship was starting to change, right? The dynamics, because you are so focused and goal-oriented on changing and evolving. If it was becoming so overwhelming in your specific energetics day-to-day, then I think parting ways is the right thing. And I truly believe that if people are meant to be with one another, you will find your way back. I think some people are there for a season. Some people are there for lessons. And oftentimes, even if relationships end on a good note, that doesn't mean it's not still really challenging. We can't make someone else change. And so if you know that you want your certain life to look a certain way, and really this can be for like partners, for friends, like at work, who are you around and what are they pulling into your life? If say partner, for an example, that's one of the biggest decisions that we make is who we decide to spend our lives with and commit with. And if you are going to have children or fur babies, you know, because you're pulling in two people's values, two people's work ethics, you are around that person more than anyone else in your life, except for yourself. And so if that is not feeling on the deepest level where it needs to be in this moment, and you've worked on it or addressed it, right? So I'm not saying if you haven't addressed it, just leave. I think if you care and love someone, you talk about it and you address it, because I think oftentimes we don't communicate enough and we just tend to not say things. But I think communication and repair within communication can really save a relationship. But sometimes you can communicate and repair and love, but it just doesn't mean it's the right path right now.
Okay. I just got some holistic counseling and I didn't mean to. Can you, if someone, so you have clients here and you do virtually sessions
as
well,
right? Yeah, virtual as well, yeah.
So if, what kind of issues does someone come to you? They say, Caroline, I need some holistic counseling because I'm dealing with this. What are the things that people are dealing with when they come to you?
A lot of relationship transitions, I would say. So a lot of, you know, breakups or feeling stuck and stale, or just coming out of that and not really knowing maybe who they are right now and in their stage of their life, not really knowing, like what they like to do or how to heal. I think a lot of my clients come because they're like, I just feel stuck and I just don't even know how to start to get unstuck. And that can be such a suffocating feeling for anyone to have.
What are people stuck with? Because I've felt that recently. And so I'm 28 and I feel like there is kind of a period where once you've been in the adult world, post-college, you've had the adult job and lived on your own for a couple of years, you kind of reach a point a few years in where you just feel like, is this what I wanted? Where am I going with my life? Like, am I building toward what I do want, or do I completely change course because I haven't invested that much time, energy, and money in yet? For me, example, like I'm single, I don't have any kids or fur babies. I've never heard that term before. I have no responsibilities to anyone but myself. So I have the freedom to do whatever I want. And at this point in my life, like I have felt stuck, and I know other people at this time in our lives feel stuck as well. So when people say that they feel stuck exactly, like dig deeper, what exactly does that mean?
I would ask you, in what areas do you feel fulfilled?
This right now, I feel very fulfilled doing this. This is my absolute favorite thing in the world to do. But this isn't this is like my side gig, and this is just a hobby of mine, but it's also very similar to my day job, which is podcast producing behind the scenes about combat sports, which is not something that like I'm in love with. It's just something I like doing and I like the people I work with. But I know ultimately it is not the thing that I want to do for the rest of time. I would like to be doing more like this kind of thing, but that's not what I'm doing. So I'm like, I'm stuck in my career. How do I get to that? How do I get to this? How do I make this like a full-time thing that can put a roof over my head and whatnot? Because that would be fulfilling to me. I feel fulfilled in my creative stuff like this, my published book, my Substack, social media, all of that is fulfilling to me. My relationships are a bit, I could definitely benefit from some stronger ones, more like-minded people. physically, I feel very fulfilled in terms of physical health. I take very good care of myself. I sleep right. I eat right. I exercise perhaps too much, but I'm very fulfilled. So at this present moment, I feel pretty good, but maybe a few months ago, especially when I got diagnosed with diabetes and that kind of like flipped my life upside down, that made me freak out and ask myself all sorts of existential questions about like, oh my God, like, am I broken? Should I move back home nearby my family to be under their constant watch? Is my life completely about to change? Is everything I've ever wanted just going to be ripped out from underneath me because now my entire life's mission is just to stay alive now and deal with this thing?
Yeah. And that's something that was out of your control, right? So then all of a sudden, when something comes into our life that is out of our control, we start to try to grab things that are in our control.
Yes. And that's exactly what I did. Yeah. That's so funny that you say that because yeah, and I got diagnosed at the end of August. And then I was like, okay, out of my control, what can I control? I'm going to move. And so I almost moved. I decided not to, but that was certainly something that I tried to control because I work remotely, so I can very easily just go up and do anything. And so that was one way I tried to control it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So that's always something to come back to is like in that way. And you mentioned one of the first things you brought up was your career, right? So just if anyone, just to give a piece of advice or maybe like an action step in getting unstuck is first asking what you're fulfilled in. I think that can help to show that there are probably areas that maybe we don't need to focus on right this moment because you can't just fix every single category all at once. So my approach is starting with one thing and what feels like a realistic and doable thing and always coming with building small pieces of success and empowerment. So I'll just go with your example, right? Wanting to do podcasting more full time and like this is the fulfilling piece and having these conversations is really what you're doing right now, which is still doing them, having this part of your life, even though it's not the entire thing yet, starting to put away more and more in maybe a savings so that you can give yourself a 6-month grace period to really kind of like jump off the cliff and maybe see where this can go if you put into it full time. That I'm not saying like quit your job or anything like that. Like for anyone out there, don't just listen and quit your job. But I'm just starting to think about how can I start to set myself up in a different way? Or if you're stuck and feeling like I really don't love my body, I really don't love how I feel when I try to run. Okay, so when we start small, what is something tangible that you can do? You don't just jump out and run a marathon. So I think so often people like really with New Year's resolutions too, just like set these huge goals from the start and then get very frustrated when you don't meet them right away. But rather it's like small steps that you can control that are practical. But it, yeah, first just comes down to asking yourself what you want in this moment and what can you do today to get there?
One of my favorite kind of mindset shifts over the last few years, because I used to be one to struggle with just setting big goals and then it's so big that I don't even know where to start. I don't know what the path is. The mindset shift that I've had is like, just get 0.01% better at this thing today, because it's that small minuscule step for me. Like I'll use an example with this podcast. Okay. With each episode, I'm like, how can I make this 0.01% better? And it'll literally be like, maybe there's a graphic on the screen right now, Caroline, that's here. And that's like, oh, here's one thing I did last time that I didn't do. It has now made it 0.01% better. And I apply that to everything else in my life as well. Because if you just keep adding 0.01%, 0.01%, it compounds exponentially. It's like, oh, wait, now you've actually gotten 50% better. It may have taken longer, but it's better than that 1% better that you got when you initially started and had all these big goals.
I love that. I'm going to start applying that too. And I think so often I love these conversations, if I'm being honest, because so often a lot of us like have these thoughts somewhere in our mind, but then when we hear it again, or we read it somewhere, or we, yeah, listen to it on a podcast, it just like clicks again. And I think that's another just like helpful thing is what are just some like little reminders day to day. So for you, even if you want to, you write it on a sticky note, how can I get 1% better today? And just come back to it. Because if it's not in the forefront for us, our subconscious mind typically reroutes to the same thoughts day to day to day. We're not really producing a lot of different thoughts unless you are working towards it and actively trying to shift the kind of like the rewiring in our brain. So one way that I always encourage my clients to do that is to actually like write it out, put it in your notes, have a calendar reminder that comes on at like noon, right? Every day or like certain times to remind yourself, like, I'm going to use your example, like, how can I get 1% better at this? I'm even hearing when you say that for me, I'm like, okay, how can I get 1% better at being a good friend today? Can I listen a little bit more presently? Can I give someone maybe a compliment that I see them, see in them all the time, but never actually say to them, right? Like you can literally apply this to any area of your life.
So if I veered off course a little bit. In our session, if I'm coming to you because I'm stuck in my life, what will that session consist of?
Kind of like what we've been, you know, doing.
Oh,
And I think every person is different and it depends on where we are at in terms of the trust within one another as well. And just where you're willing to go with your own healing. I think what's different for me is that I don't just, we have a session, then I'm like, all right, good luck. Like, see you later. It's like checking in. It's providing like tangible resources and tools. So after a session or in real time, it's like, here are some, not homework, but like, here are some things that you can do of like, let's set some intentions. Like, can you put one, try one for a week and where did you write it throughout the week? Can you look at yourself in the mirror every morning? Like really look at yourself and tell yourself that intention. Is there a new podcast that you can try to find in terms of career? Can you try to think of maybe someone who has walked a similar path or that you inspire to walk? And if you don't have someone in mind, maybe your goal is to find someone, start to research, start to make connections. So, and the energetic piece as well, if I'm doing energetic work or like chakra work, there are honestly certain yoga poses, there's certain meditations, there's certain foods that can activate different chakra and energy levels. So if a client wants to go there, then with them, I would also be providing them with that piece as well. Different inner child meditations if they're working on healing a dynamic within themselves or within their family. So every person, their goals are going to look vastly different.
Are you familiar with the author Brianna Wiest?
Love.
Okay, yeah. I feel like a lot of yoga instructors are really big into her. I just recently read The Mountain Is You, and I just ordered The Pivot Year, so I can't wait to have that. She wrote something in The Mountain Is You that really stuck with me and struck a chord. I myself, the past few years, I've been on this path toward enlightenment and self-actualization and figuring out the meaning of life and how to be happy. And everyone in the world is trying to be happy. And I don't think I've ever really felt or found what I've been looking for in the past few years. But then Brianna wrote, "We are not wired for happiness. We are wired for what's comfortable." Which kind of echoes back to what I was saying earlier about evolution. We are wired to find shelter, to be safe from prey and bad weather and natural disasters. We are not wired to be happy. Our ancestors weren't trying to be happy. They were just trying to survive. And maybe happiness was a byproduct, but it was not what we were designed for. So I think it kind of, we're all kind of trying to be happy, but we're searching for it. And she also said that happiness is not something that you search for, just something that you allow. And I've actually found that when I look back at my life, in the times when I've been happiest, it's been in the times where I haven't even realized it. It's just been in the times where I didn't force it, where it just kind of was. I'm kind of experiencing that right now. I'm not happy because like, oh, I did X, Y, and Z steps to get here. It's just like, oh, you know what? I feel really freaking good every day. I would say I'm pretty happy right now.
I'm actually just starting to read that book. So
Sorry for spoiling it.
No. I'm like a few chapters in and I kind of skim in and out, but I was like, I'm going to start it from the beginning instead of just flipping to a random page. And so I love that you brought her up and that example of the happiness piece. I think it's very easy to say like when, I'm going to go back to you. When I have this new job, I will feel happy. I think people do that all the time. When I get married, I'll feel happy. When I get this raise, I'll feel happy. When I run the marathon, I'll feel happy. But it's not about like that end goal because you're going to meet it. And then what? And so it really, I love that you shared that, because it's truly about like the present moment and feeling those little moments of happiness when you're not trying to force it, when you're not trying to be someone else or be somewhere else or achieve something else, but then rather just be in the moment. Which again, to circle back to like our very beginning part of this whole conversation, we often fight to be away from the present moment by like filling our time with social media, with conversations, with others, with work, with tasks. But is that truly fulfilling you in the moment?
One of the most ultimate form of presence is meditation. And it's often one of the, you know, if you ever see an article that's 7 ways to fix your life or 9 ways to do this, it's always like journaling, get outside, exercise, meditation is always on that list as well. And it will solve all your problems. It's ridiculously hard. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions around what meditation is and what it isn't. Can you tell me how to do meditation correctly?
Oh, that's a tough one.
It is tough.
It's tough because a lot of my answers, if you're finding, it's just there's not one way, right, to do meditation correctly. We could sit here and just take 3 breaths in and out. And if we are fully and truly just in this present moment, we have just meditated correctly. If you can meditate for 20 minutes with a guided meditation, you've meditated correctly. If you tried to meditate and then halfway through your phone rang, your dog started barking, you pulled your attention away, but then back into the moment, you're still meditating correctly. It's more the intention behind the action versus the action itself.
Yes, it's not necessarily sitting crisscross in front of a candle for 10 minutes with a timer with some funky music behind you. It can really be, for me, the ways I meditate out in the world are just I'm out on a walk and I'm thinking all of my thoughts. I'm thinking about the work and the conversation with the friend last night and like, oh, I have to do this. And then it's, Troy, wait, you're on a walk. Look at that tree right there. Look at that lake. How cool is that? Look at that bird just having the time of its life and just pausing to be in that moment, to recognize it, to appreciate it for. And just taking, I love doing like a 4 count inhalation, 4 count, hold it, 4 count, exhale. And that just instantly brings me to the present moment. And I think that's a form of meditation.
That is a form of meditation. And that's meditating correctly. There's walking meditating. You can do it while you're eating. That's another one as well. How often do you have the TV on or distractions? But when's the last time you've just sat and you've looked at your meal, you've smelt it, you've really tasted each bite? That is a form of meditation. You can meditate while you brush your teeth because it's just being aware, like feeling the sensation. So it's really more about being pulled into the present moment versus that traditional, yes, like sitting cross-legged. I tend to do my meditations nowadays lying down. Sometimes I fall asleep when I do it if I'm trying to do more of a traditional. So do what works for you. That's the other thing. And try out a bunch of different ways. So you might love and find that meditating on a walk and just more connecting to the elements in the moment is the best way for you to feel pulled into the present moment. But someone else might find that very challenging, right? But we don't know until we try. So there's really no right or wrong way. It's just more of attempting.
You wrote also in your Instagram a while back about the importance of play as an adult. I feel like we become adults and we think we can't go on the swing. We can't throw a dance party in our kitchen anymore. We're grownups. We have to be put together. We have to set a good example. But you seem to be against that. Why is play so important?
It keeps us connected to our inner child, which really, really what it comes down to it. And that sense of that innocence in youth, right? When you look at people just playing, they're just playing with those around them and they're just in the present moment and they're not worried about what their body looks like when they're dancing or if they're on tune or, you know, if they seem goofy out in public, if they're giggling with people, like they're just fully pulled in, or even just swimming in the ocean or just doing something that just connects you more to that childlike root. And I'm not saying, you know, in a professional workplace, all of a sudden we need to be like giggling and all that stuff, right? There's a time and a place to practice play, but just allowing yourself moments to not take yourself so seriously. Like, it's just, life is too short to do that.
Someone said to me last year that adults are really just growing up children, and that the more I get close with people and, you know, you begin to let your guard down, I do realize that, like, you can, if you're comfortable with someone, you can let your inner child to come out way more, which I echo your sentiments. It's so important. And I feel so much more present when I just allow myself to, yeah, go swim in the ocean or go swim in the pool and just let all the cares go away. So important. And not enough of us do that.
No, we take ourselves too seriously.
So seriously. Life is so hard.
Life is hard enough. Like, we need to have a little bit of grace with ourselves and laugh at yourself and just be playful with it. It just helps to foster that own, like, child relationship with yourself too.
Do you have any kids?
Not yet. Just a fur baby.
Okay. Do you want any kids?
I don't know.
Okay. Because I'm in the same boat. I don't know. And the reason why I don't know is because I am so aware of inner child trauma and how, as adults, we need inner child healing. And there's so many things that happen in our formative years that mess us up. And I have a running joke with my parents, like, guys, you mess me up so much. You're the reason why I am why I am. And so there's a part of me that is scared to bring another life into this world and do something that will mess them up forever.
And, you know, the reality is you're going to do something that will have an impact on them. I think even the most amazing and aware parents are there. Everyone is going to go through that experience. Like, there's no other way to, like, be a human, right, than to do that. And I've now noticed, you know, for my own parents, they were just doing the best that they had with what they had. But I agree with you where now my goal has been also to heal as much of my own stuff as I can so that if and when that happens for me, that I can be as aware of myself. But you're not going to be perfect. I think just like I said, with relationships in terms of repair and communication is huge. Same thing with parenting, repair and communication is huge.
In closing, and thank you for being here. I've enjoyed this. What are your New Year's resolutions in 2024? Or what are you most working on? What are you trying to improve about yourself the most right now?
That's a great question. So for me, I don't do a resolution. I do one word that I want to embody. And I try to bring that word into every aspect of my life. So this year, I chose expansion. And so how can I be more expansive within my own business? So how can I expand my business? How can I expand my yoga teaching? How can I expand, like, my learning? So this year is really a year to not only expand in terms of really my business is one of the focuses, but just myself as well and my community, the friendships that I'm making, and just the energy that I'm putting out. I think it's easy to let others dictate your own light and your own energy. So how can I make sure that I'm always being expansive for myself and for others, and I'm being that light?
I struggle with, so that sounds, first of all, I love that. That sounds ambitious. I also have a lot of ambition. And I think for ambitious people, it can be very difficult to be content, because you're always thinking, how can I do better? How can I get more? This current thing, whatever I have, is not enough. How do you strike that balance between being okay with what you have, but not being too okay with it to the point that it stops you from growing, versus the opposite of always striving, but never being content with what you do have?
Yeah, that's hard.
So hard.
It's like being human, right? It's like one of the many challenges. I like to do a monthly, and I'll be honest, sometimes I don't get to it monthly. So maybe even like quarterly, just reflections. I think it's easy to kind of get away from your achievements, but if you actually take time, say once a month, to reflect on the growth that you had over that month, even if it was just you built one new relationship in terms of a client relationship with someone, or you wrote like you had a lot of engagement with post or with a certain episode that you did. So I think that there are small ways to reflect on the current growth that can help you to be grateful and appreciative of the work that you're doing in real time. But then always, it's always great to have goals. It's just knowing that you are not only your goals. That's just a part of who you are. So as long as you are tuning into yourself on a deeper level, I think it is always great to want and achieve, but just make sure that you're not putting your entire self-worth on if you are achieving to the level that you set.
I think that is a great place to end. I wish you all the best of luck on your expansion this year. Thank you for being here. Care Rose Wellness on Instagram.
Yes.
CareRoseWellness.com.
Yes, correct.
That is where we can have the listeners go to find out more about you, what you offer, and to book you for virtual sessions. Okay. Yeah, I will absolutely put all of that information in the show notes of this episode. Caroline, thank you for being here, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.